living room.
It is the northernmost megacity on the planet. It's also the most populous city in Europe and the fifth largest city proper on Earth. This is Moscow, a city of magnetic energy that pulls people from all corners of the world to find a home like no other place. Who are these modern Moscovites, and how do they influence the fabric of contemporary living in Russia? You'll find out on The Living Room. You're tuned to The Living Room on Radio Sputnik, and I'm Anastasia Fedorova. A few weeks ago, I went to a wine tasting in a very cozy Dutch restaurant downtown Moscow. It was the first time the Wine Club of Moscow mixed Russians and expats for an intimate event of tastings of, what do you know, fine Russian wines. When I arrived fashionably late, I realized that the sommelier and I were the first guests at the party. Next, I find out that I was invited to interpret the lecture about wines for the English speakers. Thankfully, my experience in winemaking and wine tasting surfaced up in my memory, and happily I was able to translate, taste, and even entertain the lovely crowd. That's where I met Simon Green, an Englishman who's lived in Moscow for 13 years now. People that have an appreciation for fine dining usually tend to gravitate towards each other, so Simon and I had a good ground for a talk on The Living Room.
For me personally, if I go back a little bit, I've been to 74 countries, and I've still got quite a lot more to go to, and I've worked and lived in about 18 to 20. This part of the world I'd never been to, and I'd always been fascinated by it because my father had a military background in World War II, and it was always sort of like, you know, the communists are the bad guys, we're the good guys. And I'd always been fascinated by this concept. And of course, growing up, I watched a lot of spy thrillers on TV. And then an opportunity came when I'd come back from Saudi Arabia, and I took 6 months out travelling just to get Saudi out of the system. And believe me, if you've ever been to that part of the world, you'd understand what I mean. And then I saw an advert in the Daily Mail just saying something strange. It was almost sort of like implied mafia troubleshooters. That's the word they use. Yeah, they wanted troubleshooters for an office equipment company. Russia. I thought, oh my God, it's like a mafia type thing, because I didn't know any better, which of course it absolutely wasn't. And what it was they wanted expats to be able to knock on the doors of international companies, because the Russian accountmen just had no chance of getting into them. They just weren't taken too seriously by senior expat directors. So that's how I came out here. I saw the opportunity, went for an interview, and actually about 200 people turned up for the interview. And I rather assumed, oh, I've no chance here, because I saw all these sort of young guys in like five-piece suits. I thought, oh, well, you know. But because I had expat experience, they loved it. So I was offered a job. Never looked back, actually.
Living room.
I've been a regular at some expat events in local pubs, where I know a few people and meet new interesting characters for my show. Something I've noticed about English expats in Moscow is that they usually tend to carve out a social niche for themselves. And it's been like this for over a decade. Brits and Americans own pubs, bars and clubs which attract specifically an expat crowd, where the boys meet up for a beer and a catch-up session. Simon Green, the guest of my living room this week, is a regular at some of these pubs where the boys congregate.
Moscow, if you're not careful, Moscow can be quite a lonely city. And it's quite difficult when you first arrive, especially when you're a single guy. You've got to find out where the action is. Okay, you've got your work side of it, and you can get some advice from some people, which is always useful. But everyone's different in personality. So it does take a while for you to be able to carve out your own particular niche, which is different strokes for different folks. And I have found now I try to achieve quite a nice balance. I would love to go out every night of the week, but hey, let's be realistic, it can't happen. There's plenty of parties to go to. I have people every day phoning me up, hey Simon, come down to Papa's, or, you know, come to Hudson or whatever. There's a party going on, there's a group of us there. But you have to be realistic. If you're getting up early in the morning, you simply can't do it. Because, to be really honest with you, I'm not one of these people who will go along and have just one drink. Because you're going to meet people there, and one drink will turn into six.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a fact of life, and Moscow offers that. So I try and achieve a balance where possible, because it's very easy. Interestingly enough, people talk about, when I go back to the UK, they will talk about, oh, you know, everyone's swimming in vodka. Personally, I don't like the stuff, and most of the expats I know don't really drink it. We're much more into beer and wine. So I think if you can achieve some sort of balance, I try to be quite strict that Sunday is obviously a school night, so I'm not going to push the boat out too much. probably Monday, Tuesday, I would maybe have a couple of glasses at home because I'm preparing lessons and stuff. But then usually midweek there's some sort of event going on at some place. And then Friday, Saturday, yeah, I do push the boat out because most of my friends will be going to two or three different places. Very interesting in Moscow that places very quickly become the in place to go to or passé. And this happens quite a lot. So you do need to keep up with, you know, what's hot and what's not. This is something that's actually fairly peculiar, I think, to Moscow. Because in England, it wouldn't happen because the pub shut like at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock and it just simply doesn't happen. But here in Moscow, 1 o'clock can very easily become 5 o'clock and you don't even know the time's gone if you're having a good time. And this is something that if I said to somebody the next day, oh, okay, I didn't get home till 5 or 6 in the morning, no one would even blink. If I said that in England, people would collapse in shock. Oh my God, you know.
Living room. Another interesting point Simon Green makes is that these expat hangouts have a lot to do with networking in Moscow.
When you go meeting people, apart from saying, hi, how are you, let's catch up on news, and there's always lots to talk about, there is the networking aspect, which is a very big thing here, a huge thing. The number one rule I was told when I first arrived here, nearly 13 years ago now, was if you don't have a business card, you're nobody. And this was a very valid point, and it's still true today. You know, whenever I go out, I will always have business cards with me, and I will always take them to give to people. I'm still surprised at the number of people who can't reciprocate, but again, I'm always looking for new clients. It's a big thing. And when you go talking to people in this pub situation, like yesterday, I'll give you a good example. I went to Osteria Bianca to book a table for a lesson tonight, a lesson. Because she said to me, I've heard about this restaurant, you've talked about it, Simon, can we have a lesson in there? I said, well, why not? Let's do it. So I'm making the reservation last night, and the lady is speaking like pre-intermediate English, and the doorman spoke very good English. In fact, he sounded like he could have been partially English. And seconds later, she takes my business card for the reservation, says, can I keep it? I want English lessons. What are your rates? I'll phone you tomorrow, she said. I want to start lessons with you. And that's an opportunity there out of nothing. And this happens when you're socialising in downtown Moscow.
The more I meet foreigners living and working in Russia, the more I realize that expats have created their own bubble, and only a few of them tend to break away into the Russian reality. Moscow offers expats a life that they want to live without them having to assimilate into the Russian culture. Although Simon knows the city very well and gets around like a good old Moscovite, he still looks like a foreigner and feels like a foreigner in the city. Simon offers what I believe is a good breakdown of expats in Moscow and why some of them don't get to see the city at all.
No question about it. There's something for everyone here. It was interesting what you were saying just now about people coming here without families. A lot of them, because I was doing real estate before I was doing teaching, and a lot of them actually live in places like Rusinka. These senior people are from Tayankar BP, or PwC, those sort of people. And the wives out there with their families and their 2.5 kids and the black Labradors, they don't actually see much of Moscow because they have the chauffeur driver comes to pick up the husband at 7 o'clock in the morning, take him into his office. They basically meander around the compound, and I know this because I've seen this with my own eyes, and they meet up with other bored expat wives, and they all have their sort of sherry at midday and gin and tonic and stuff like that, and badmouth their maids and why the maids aren't cleaning well enough, and that's their day. And then they venture towards Himki, for places like, you know, Auchan, IKEA, and they'll do that on a Saturday, and they think they actually see Moscow. Same with the people who come from the embassies. They get cocooned in their own little world in the embassy apartments, and a lot of them don't really see that much of Moscow. They're almost True. Like afraid of it. Some of them are encouraged not to travel by metro. Anyway, those are what we call the corp pats. But then you've got, and they are a fairly small minority in fairness, but then you've got the people like myself, who are the, you know, the true expats, the ones who come there, usually will find a Russian girlfriend stroke wife at some time or other, but they'll come here alone, ready for the adventure. And most of my friends are people like myself who are 10 years plus in. And, you know, Moscow's like a small village, of course, because everyone knows everyone, which can be good and bad, depending what you're up to. And I have to say that for me, it's been much more good than bad. I mean, I could go to a party every night of the week. Unfortunately, I have to get up early to do my lessons, so you have to be reasonably well self-controlled. But it's out there, as you rightly said. There's always something going on. Happy hours, dinner parties, whatever.
Living Room.
The guest on the Living Room this week is Simon Green. These days, he is a private teacher of English for corporate clients, a good profession for expats in Moscow who want a comfortable life and a flexible schedule. Simon already mentioned that he's visited 74 countries, and prior to moving to Moscow, he lived in Saudi Arabia, an experience that definitely adds texture to one's life. But I wondered if Simon finds himself closer to Asia now that he's living in Russia, or he still feels that he is a part of the Western world.
You've obviously got some parts of Russia, like there's a lot of expats down in Yuzhny Sakhalinsk, and there I think you're getting a lot more East meets West there, because you're much more Asia-fied, if I may say so.
Yes.
But I came from Saudi, which of course was obviously very Muslim, very Arabic, extremely strict and restrictive, and it was a great leveller. And believe me, I used to come across a lot of expats who would arrive in the country all guns blazing. 2 months later, they were a broken man. It was awful to see. And they would do a moonlight flit and disappear without even getting their salary, because it just broke them. For women, of course, it was very tough as well. For the ladies, not allowed to work, not allowed to drive, not allowed to talk to any expats in the street who weren't your husband. And if you did, you know, you'd be jailed and or flogged. Yeah, it was draconian, to say the least. And so for them, all they could do was stay by the swimming pool all day, which for the first 30 days was life of Riley. They thought, this is it, I've landed. But they got bored very quickly, as anyone with half a brain would out there.
Yeah.
So, of course, I had 5 years in various different countries in the Middle East, some of which, like Dubai and Bahrain, were much more relaxed in their rules, and you could drink in the bars, blah, blah, blah. But Saudi, of course, where predominantly I spent my time, was a different kettle of fish. So coming to Moscow after that was an absolute stroll in the park. It was a Sunday afternoon picnic in comparison.
Living Room.
A very interesting distinction between life in Russia and in England is the news and the speed at which things change.
The major thing which hits me is that if something big happens in England, it's major world news. But the fact of the matter is, nothing very much really happens in England. Probably 350 days out of 365 days, they'll have pictures of the baby Prince George on the front page of the newspaper like they did last Sunday. And that's like big news, because people like that sort of stuff. Come to Moscow, things happen, and they happen quickly, and they happen suddenly. And the Muscovites in particular, where the hub seems to be centred around, know very well how to adapt to situations, and they adapt, go with the flow very quickly, and adapt to a tricky situation. Whereas in England, if something slightly calamitous happens, like a ruble collapse, people will be talking in the pubs and stuff about absolutely nothing else for the next 2 days. It will dominate all conversations everywhere.
By the end of my talk with Simon, he confessed that what he really finds strikingly different in Russia is women.
If I compare them to British ladies, yeah, Russian women look after themselves beautifully. They're always well presented. They wouldn't dream of going out the front door unless they looked $1 million. I, for one, appreciate the aesthetics. That's a major, major difference. Every expat will tell you that as soon as they land in London, the first thing they notice is, oh, my God, where are the beautiful women?
Really?
It's the first thing they notice. It hits you in the face. You can't ignore it. Nice thing is, a lot of them, even though they make the effort, a lot of them don't quite know how attractive they are. Whereas the British women just don't know how to look after themselves. They just let themselves go. It's almost like as soon as they've got 2.5 children and a black Labrador, they're suddenly middle-aged. That's how they look. And I find that a bit sad. Whereas a lot of, you know, you get the French middle-aged women who are very chic and elegant. And a lot of the Russian older ladies as well can also look extremely attractive.
Yes.
They never forget how to look after themselves. They never forget, you know, how to attract men.
This week, I met with Simon Green, an Englishman with a mysterious history, a fine taste for life, and a desire for adventure, all of which he has found in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to The Living Room on Radio Sputnik.